So, what were we talking about?
Criterion.
Oh, right. That's what we always talk about. And in Manchester by the Sea, since you have a first-hand look, so is Manchester by the Sea as blue-collary as it looked?
No, it's not. That's actually the one thing I think people from around here would say, I don't know about that. I mean, I think they got the flavor of this general area
pretty
down, but I think, yeah, it's a little bit nicer of a town than I think it was portrayed in that. You know, maybe Gloucester is not as attractive of a title for a movie as Manchester by the Sea. So.
Yeah. Gloucester by the Dock.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're on the show, and this is Criterion Now 6, and I have Matt Gastier, and I think aside from Mark, Mark is just part of this anyway, but I think you're the second repeat guest because you were on the first one, right?
I was on the first one. Wow.
Yeah. I know. Dave, wow.
I'm going to have to talk trash to Dave Eves after this show.
You can. In fact, I think you can just talk trash to Davies every day. It's fine.
Yeah.
I do.
I pretty much do, yeah.
That's pretty much how I occupy my spare time. So anyway, this is 6, and I wasn't going to have this show, but it was just easy because you and I were available, and we talked about a lot last week, so I figured to kind of unwind, talk about some of the leftover things. And plus, it's, you know, there's a lot that happens, I found, and if I try to cram too much into a show, when we have things like last week with Blakesley getting stumbled on the speed round. So, Matt Gastier, anything you want to say about yourself before we go?
I'm just a guy who watches movies. No, that's my thing. I've seen all the Criterions.
Me
all
too.
All the Spy Numbers.
Oh, are you current now?
Something Wild and Tree of Wooden Clogs. But okay. Something Wild is on Filmstruck, so I plan on watching that this week.
All right. Well, we're going to get to that. So, figured we'd start with a downer. We lost, I would say maybe a master, but a Japanese legend filmmaker, Seijun Suzuki. He died at the age of 93, and we heard about it like a week after he died, which is strange. That happens in Japan somehow. I think that happened with Setsuko Hara, didn't it?
Yes.
It was about a week or so, and no cause of death, but he was 93, so I don't think he was really in the game anymore. But, we start with we'd like to bum our listeners out first. but a little in memoriam, do you have any favorites of a Suzuki?
Youth of the Beast is probably my favorite. I do also love that 1-2 punch of Branded to Kill and Tokyo Drifter. You know, he was retired, so it's not quite on the level of Kiarostami or someone like who still probably had a lot of work in them.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, I mean, he was one of those major figures in that wave of Japanese filmmakers, and also kind of set up, you know, what the potential could be for working within a tight genre range,
mm-hmm.
and really doing something above and beyond what you would expect from a movie of that scale and of that budget. So I think, you know, that's really where his mark on film history is going to be.
Yeah, and not just working within a genre, but working within a very controlling studio that's trying to stifle your creativity, and him managing to let a little bit out along the way. I think he definitely left his mark there. Especially, I think a lot of the 70s Japanese films definitely had his trade or his influence. I like those two. I think my favorite is Tokyo Drifter of the pair but I think my favorite of his films is probably Story of a Prostitute, which is a little slower and more what you think about from an art film director. I did like Gate of Flesh a lot,
yep.
which is an early one. I really like the set design on that. They really captured bombed out Tokyo. I think like no other film I've seen. I think they did a excellent job. I'd like to see that come out on Blu-ray. I think it's on DVD, right?
Yeah, all three of the other ones are DVD only,
right.
It would be nice to see all three of them upgraded. I think they probably picked Tokyo Drifter and Brandon to Kill, along with the fact that I think they're kind of his most well-known films. Sure. I think they also picked them because they were such early spines, and so therefore were not the greatest transfers. So
sure.
I think the same thing is happening right now with in May with Good Morning rather than Early Summer, where they have high definition transfers of both of those, but Good Morning was just such an atrocious transfer that they need to rectify that situation quicker. So
they're trying to right a wrong, really.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen Youth of the Beast, so that's one I'm looking forward to. But I do have the Masters of Cinema. I think I rubbed that in to you earlier this week.
You did.
Yeah, it's just, but I haven't watched it, so I guess. Yay, Region B. I have lots of discs that I've actually seen quite a few, but not I haven't seen all of them.
You should definitely pull that one out. It's a trip.
Yeah, and I want to. So another In Memoriam, and this one's a little more upbeat because, and I was going to cover it last week, but we just had so much going on. But the IMDb message boards, IMDb message boards went away. And I actually have some opinions on this. I actually am going to miss them, even though they were dumb and inane and there were a lot of trolls. But sometimes I liked that. And to see some of the debates that would go on, or even like with obscure films, the ones we watch. So I watched Manchester by the Sea, as I already mentioned, and that's a film that I think there would be a pretty feisty conversation going on about the character, maybe, about the way Manchester was portrayed. So anyway, IMDb decided they were just going to take those away, and I think not a lot of people in our circles cried too much. So I don't know, do you look at the IMDb boards?
I do. Every once in a while I'll decide I want to take some internet punishment and drive by the fiery car crash and scroll down to the board. And then also a lot of times with an upcoming movie, I'm interested in seeing what people are saying about it. I can't get too into detail on what I do, but I do work in the movie industry, and I actually occasionally would use the IMDb message boards as kind of a gut check on films that are coming out and kind of what the buzz is about and things like that.
Oh, man, are you a plant? Are you one of those guys that's promoting the movie?
Yeah, exactly. Everybody go see Ghost in the Shell coming out. But I think, there's still YouTube for that, kind of the reaction to the trailers and things like that.
Sure.
But I think there was a lot more opportunity for, it sounds weird about the IMDb message boards, but a little bit more in-depth conversation about the films. And even though it's a kind of juvenile in-depth nature, it was often interesting.
Yeah, mostly it was superficial, but there were some good conversations. Somebody might write a 300-word essay about the meaning of a film, and so some people might take it apart or start trolling him, and the one sentence responses, "You were stupid," that would happen. But yeah, sometimes there would be some good conversations. And what I really liked, I watched some movie from the 70s, a coming of age movie, and I want to know what happened to the child actor, or say an actress that stopped working, see what they're doing. A lot of times, IMDb, that people would dig up those little nuggets. So I think we did lose another information delivery system. So about film. So yeah, I'm a little disappointed, and I don't really get why they did it.
I think it's a corporate decision. Amazon owns IMDb. They didn't feel like running it anymore. They felt like it was probably more trouble than it was worth.
That's probably it.
And that's all there was to it.
All right, well, let's move on. RIP IMDb, and a serious RIP to Seijun Suzuki. So it is weird to lose these classic filmmakers that we kind of take for granted. And a lot of times, it's not that I knew Suzuki was alive, but because he's been out of the game, I don't think of him as being alive, and that you'd actually mourn. I know that sounds weird, but...
Yeah, he was interviewed on a number of the discs that they put out for him, and he always had a great story to tell and a lot of insight into his films, and of course, he had a very... a very wry way of describing his career. So I believe he said, I make films that make no sense and make no money.
Yeah, he did say that. That's great. And yeah, that's pretty accurate too. But in a lot of those features, he was pretty old. But I think even those, they go back a ways. So
yeah.
I don't know how he was towards the end. So anyway, well, let's move on. As you heard, we talked about the May releases last week. And wow, that was a big slate. So just to catch up, do you want to give any thoughts on anything, any of the titles?
Well, I am really excited about the World Cinema box set, especially the Edward Yang, getting another Edward Yang film. But they all sound really great. I did have one story on Ghost World that I thought was worth telling that might be of interest to people. I actually saw Ghost World before it was released in a early cut of the film. They were recruiting teenagers to, I was in high school at the time, before the movie came out, and they were recruiting teenagers to watch the movie and then have kind of a mini focus group on what they thought of the film and what they would change and what they would do differently. And there was probably about 20 or so more minutes in the film that I saw than the film that was released in the theaters. I think that most of that stuff is included in the deleted scenes that have already been out there and are going to be included on this release. For example, I think Thora Birch sleeps with the Brad Renfro character in the earlier cut, which they deleted from the finished film. But the only thing I really remember about my feedback was something that I'm still consistent on 20 years later, which is that I found Scarlett Johansson to be incredibly awkward, and I did not like her character at all.
Huh, so interesting.
I was giving them poor advice about cutting out Scarlett Johansson. But
went that far.
Well, no, I didn't go that far. But I was just saying, you know, I didn't like her character. I would prefer her to be minimized, and I felt that way about pretty much every movie she's been in since.
So. Really? Okay. Not a Marvel Civil War fan.
I find her to be very amateurish as an actress, and I do enjoy her in Her, where it's just her voice. I think she can get away with a little bit more, but whenever she tries to start emoting, I'm back at a high school play to me.
So we could say she gets under your skin.
Oh, I get it. It's that movie.
That's terrible. Did you like that one?
I actually do love that movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I mean, you know, I also like Match Point. There's movies that I find her bearable in, but I think that they would be improved with just about any other actress in them.
That's like Thora Birch, praise. Let's hope ScarJo's not listening to this show. she might have something to say. I don't really have a strong opinion on that ScarJo, but it would be weird to I think of Ghost World as that's her breakout role, too. And it's been a while since I've seen it, but I thought that the awkwardness was probably part of it.
Yeah, to a certain degree, for sure. But I think Thora Birch hit the intentional awkwardness a little bit stronger. And you know, she was such a great actress. It was a shame that she felt like she couldn't survive in the industry. And I mean, I know she's older now and maybe a little bit more open-minded about getting back into it. I'd love to see her jump back in, because I think that was a loss in terms of that generation of actresses.
Well, she is working. She's done quite a few things, but yeah, I think you're right. Maybe she just avoided the stardom, whereas ScarJo, as we know, welcomed it with open arms. But yeah, I agree. I think Thora Birch was a good actress and had chops that she got to show off a little bit. I'm not the biggest American Beauty fan, but I thought she captured that role pretty well. So
agreed.
So anyway, well, I have a little fun thing. And as we mentioned that in an outtake that might or might not make the show, but we were talking about Speed Round and how that, I think that's a winner. So I'm going to twist it into a little game show sort of thing for you, Matt. And you can't cheat, and we do have video on, so I'll be able to see if Matt's cheating here. So if Matt wins, if you get 50% of these, Let's see, I have 8. If you get 50%, I will give you a Criterion gift card. So,
wow.
Of like a gazillion dollars. So, okay, well, Matt used to run the Twitter account Criterion by Spine. Let's start the music. All right, music's on. So I figure you might be the authority on spine numbers, so I'm going to quiz you.
Okay, here we go. Yeah. I should have kept doing that Criterion by Spine account. It would be, I'd probably get a better score here.
You might, yeah. And I wasn't sure if this was up your alley, but I did throw a couple softballs at you. So we'll give this a shot. So, okay, Spine 666. What is it?
Devil's Backbone.
Okay, that was the softball. Spine 300.
Is it Life Aquatic?
There you go, it is. Spine 200.
Ooh, 200. Not going to get that one.
All right, spine 10.
Walkabout.
Wow, you're 3 for 4 so far. Okay. All right, well, I think you're in the money. We'll see, unless you tank it the rest of the way. Spine 400.
Oh, no. No.
Okay. Spine 500. This is a
500 is easy, yeah. The Rossellini War Trilogy.
Yep, so you're at 500 right now. So you just need one more to... Because I said above 500.
Okay.
And I think I only have... Oh, 400 was Stranger than Paradise, by the way.
Okay.
So two more. Spine 750.
Ding. I know 700 and 800, but not 750.
All right, well... 700 is the next one.
Godzilla.
No, wow. All right, no? I saved some money. 700 is Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Oh, no.
750 is Ride the Pink Horse.
Is 600 Godzilla?
You know, I didn't write 600 down, but I'm going to check. Man, you could have had a gazillion dollars. Spine 600 is an Anatomy of a Murder. What'd you say?
Oh. I thought Godzilla was 600.
I don't know what Godzilla is, but I don't want to use the internet too much because that...
Yeah, no, I believe you.
...that impacts our connection. In fact, I just lost you there for a second, so I might have to edit that out. Or maybe not. Maybe I'll just leave it in and the listeners can deal. So, okay, well, you got exactly 500, so I'll give it to you anyway. That's...
Oh, hooray!
When I play it back, I'm going to listen. Did I say 500 or over 500? Or 50%? So, yeah, that was fun. You did better than I expected. I wanted to keep my money, so...
I'm proud of my walkabout.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
Well, and by the way, 200 was The Honeymoon Killers. I forget if I told you that.
Oh, okay.
Life Aquatic was pretty good. Devil's Backbone was easy.
Yeah, that's the easy one.
So, okay, well, I'm going to go back to speed round a little bit. Because you watch everything, I just want to... want to get some quick takes on recent reviews from you or recent releases from you. So we're going to do 10 seconds each and I'm just going to throw a film at you. I know this is tough.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So, all right. 10 seconds. Camera person.
Captivating, really fascinating stuff.
All right. Black girl.
Super important. Beautiful restoration. I've been waiting for this one for a long time.
You're doing well. Okay. This is Blakesley. Take note. Fox and His Friends.
One of my favorite Fassbenders, which is saying a lot because I do really love some of his movies, but I also hate a lot of his movies. This one I really enjoyed.
All right. You didn't stay in 10 seconds there.
Yeah.
His Girl Friday.
My favorite romantic comedy of all time. I've been hoping they would do this one for a while now.
Good. The Asphalt Jungle.
I like that movie. It's probably mid-range Houston for me. I don't love the performances that much.
Roma.
Roma I really enjoyed, which is saying a lot because I don't really like later Fellini.
Okay, yeah. Heart of a Dog.
Heart of a Dog is a really interesting addition. I enjoyed it. It's kind of got a Guy Madden feel, but without the irony.
Yeah. And the Exterminating Angel.
probably my favorite Boonwell. I do also really love Bourgeois, but really enjoyable stuff.
Good, all right.
Funny movie.
Ding, 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 ding. You stayed within 10 seconds on every single one except for, which one was that?
Fox and His Friends.
Fox and His Friends, yeah. So,
what are you going
to
do?
Yeah, there's a lot to say there. I just said an hour and a half worth last week about that guy. So, okay, that was, you held up there. So, yeah, regardless of what I said, you're getting the gift card. So, congratulations,
hooray.
Matt. So, okay, that was fun. All right, well, let's move on. Okay, last week we talked about there being a flash sale and it possibly coming up within the next week or two. And usually they're right about this time. Last week we gave the dates. I won't give those again. But so I don't know. When do you think there's going to be a flash sale? Or do you think there will be one?
I definitely think there will be one. I think it's going to be this week. I think last week was a holiday week. They were less likely to do it then. So a lot of people take time off for school vacation on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And I think with the Before trilogy coming out, it's kind of like the Del Toro box set that they waited for last time. And so I think it's going to be this week. And I am ready with quite a few gift certificates.
And add one to it. yeah, well, as we talked, we had the price listing mistake from Amazon. Thank you, Amazon, for messing that up. I wish they would have for the WCP2 box set, but they didn't. But I think it could be this week. I think it'll be this week or next week. They might wait a week for the Oscar buzz to die down so people can so the movie people will be talking less about whatever wins. And by the way, we're recording this on Sunday, the day of the Oscars. It'll probably go out after the Oscars. So I guess congrats, La La Land. Probably pretty safe to say, but we'll see. If Manchester by the Sea wins, I guess we look bad. But so yeah, I think either this week or next. So probably one of the Tuesdays. Yeah?
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
And probably Before trilogy will sell out quick, even with the price listing. So go get it if you want it.
Yeah, I got in on that as well. So, but there's a few others, including His Girl Friday, that I've been waiting, itching my finger to push the buy button on. So
you haven't gotten that one yet?
No, I haven't. I mean, I have the movie already.
Sure.
But I have plenty to watch. I can wait a month to pick it up for a little bit cheaper.
Yeah, and speaking of waiting a little while to pick something up, so Ugetsu is coming out. There's a 4K restoration. We knew about this, and I can't remember where. It might have played, I don't know, Cannes Classics or one of those.
It did.
Yeah. So it's finally coming soon at Janus. So the Janus Films website had that little splash page that has the coming soon titles, just really what they're touring, and that showed up on it all of a sudden. And there have been a couple screenings scheduled. I think Film Forum is scheduled, if I recall.
Yep.
And probably some others are coming. So it looks like this is going to be the spring tour and hopefully a summer upgrade release. I hadn't seen it. I this is actually one where I guessed right, where I decided I'd wait for the inevitable upgrade, and I didn't buy a Region B and haven't bothered with the DVDs. So I can just wait a little longer and be pleasantly surprised. So is this worthwhile? Are you a fan?
Yeah, you know, this is one of those movies that I think I watched early on in my quest to watch all of the movies, and I think I would probably feel pretty differently about it on a second viewing. And I wanted to go back, but I saw that it was playing Cannes Classics, which was actually I think about 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So it's been a while, yeah. So I've been waiting for this, and I do expect to like it quite a bit more on the second time. I preferred Sancho the Bailiff Ugetsu, there are quite a few people who I respect a lot who think that Ugetsu is one of the best Japanese movies ever made. So
yeah,
I am looking forward to going back to it.
Yeah, I wonder if Spine 900 is coming up, so maybe this is, I don't know if this is a high caliber enough release to get that round number, but so that would probably be in 4 months, maybe. It's possible. Four months from May, so maybe late summer. So anyway, I'm excited. We'll keep posted on that. I like to watch these before they get announced, so but I probably won't watch this one. I'll wait. Okay, well, another one that's coming out, this one is kind of a reach. The folks at Criterion Forum sniffed out The Westerner as a possible inclusion, and that's William Wyler's 1940 film with Gary Cooper and some other people, and it's about a Westerner. I haven't seen this Wyler, but I do like his Western films. This, of course, was right, probably his last one before he worked on the war effort. So that's kind of interesting. I think the reason this was sniffed out is because it I think Mr. Lime is a poster on the Blu-ray forum. I could be mixing this up, but I believe he said that WB had it. So lately, Warner Brothers titles have been coming out pretty regularly. So I don't know. Have you seen this? Or what do you think?
I haven't seen it. Would this be the first Gary Cooper in the DVD line?
Oh, he's in Design for a Living.
Oh, right. Okay. So super early Gary Cooper.
Very early. Yeah, this would be the second if it happened. And it might not. A lot of times they just see, okay, so-and-so titles are on WB. They're coming someday. And although some of them that people predicted, like Blow Out or Blow Up, I always do that, or actually Isn't Being There, isn't that Warner's?
I think so, yeah. Asphalt Jungle is Warner's.
Yeah, a whole lot. Dreams, that was a big one that people...
Right.
Although these are pretty obvious that are up Criterion's alley, so we'll see. Probably the Western coming out. So are you excited for a Wyler, or do you like Wyler?
Yeah, I like Wyler. I mean, I don't think of him as kind of a auteur-type director, but I think as far as those big-name... prestige Hollywood directors of that era go, he's pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think he worked well within the system, and he made really, really good films, but he worked in many genres, but he didn't leave as much of a stamp on his films. But I just, when I look at his filmography, I see many, many films of his that I love. And actually, he did not go to the war effort. What am I thinking? Capra and Ford and all them, they worked with the war effort, but he stayed home and did Best Years of Our Lives and some other things. So,
right.
And he did, I think, Memphis Belle. Mrs. Miniver is the big one. So,
yeah, he definitely deserves to be in the collection. So, and there's a number of his films that I think would be worthy of inclusion.
Yeah, I really like The Heiress. I don't know who has the rights, but I think he is good at adaptations. I think some of his biggest ones, like Best Years of Our Lives, probably won't happen. Probably Mrs. Miniver probably won't happen, at least now, because the studios probably are going to hold on to those. But you never know.
Agreed.
All right, well, we'll see if that one comes. So, new releases. This week we had a double whammy of Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown and Mildred Pierce. And I hadn't seen Women on the Verge before, so I didn't realize the connection of Joan Crawford, because in the beginning of Women on the Verge, they're dubbing Johnny Guitar, which that was nice. And actually, one of the guys on the forums pointed that out, Michael Hutchins, who I've mentioned here before. He's great. He pointed that out, and so probably not an accident, I think, that they released these at the same time. You agree?
Yeah, definitely.
So we're going to shelve Mildred Pierce for the next show, because it's just two in 1 week is a lot, and plus we have the Before trilogy, so we're not going to tackle that at once. But what do you think about Women on the Verge? So was this your first time, or you have seen it, right?
Yes, I have seen it. I actually haven't seen it in years. I would be interested in revisiting it. I'm not the biggest Almodovar fan. I find his sort of melodramatic angles to be a little less appealing to me. But it's not that I don't like his movies. I actually like them quite a bit, but I don't fall in love with them the way that I think a lot of people do. That being said, this is by far my favorite of his films.
Really? Okay.
it's a fun ride, and it's just really well put together. And on top of that, the cover that Criterion did for it is spectacular. So
yes,
I might actually just pick it up for the cover alone.
Well, you're going to get it anyway, right? eventually.
Well, I don't buy all of them.
Oh, you don't?
No, I'm what Keith, the completionist, calls a connoisseur.
Okay.
So I only buy the ones that I really want to own. I probably have about 150 or so.
Oh, wow. Okay. But
yeah,
you've seen all of them. Oh, interesting.
Yes. Yeah. So I watch a lot of them on Hulu or now Filmstruck.
Sure.
And then get some from the library as well.
Yeah. Well, I kind of am in lockstep with you regarding Almodovar. I've liked some of his films, but I think that, and of course that you have to appreciate him, is he's definitely an auteur. He definitely has a style and tremendous use of color. I think that's pretty constant throughout his films. Just his, when I think of Almodovar, I think of vivid colors. You know, you get your reds and blues, which are certainly the case with this film, stick out. I think Talk to Her is the one that's the most celebrated, and I like it, but I don't love it. I do tend to enjoy his comedy films more, so I just watched Women on the Verge for the first time this week, and so I need a little time to process it, but it was fun, it was zany. I didn't find myself laughing out loud too much, but I still chuckled and appreciated sort of the little, how they came around to certain motifs. So I think it is worth studying, and it could be among my favorite Almodovar's. I do like his. I also like Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down, which is sort of an unpopular favorite of his. But I think that's another good use of his style, and I think that's where some of his melodrama and comedy kind of came together too. So, are you a fan of Atami? I think it is the way you pronounce it.
Of what? I'm sorry.
Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down.
Oh yeah, I like that movie. I think it's more interesting to sort of see where his style was coalescing than as a movie on its own. It kind of reminds me of the early Cuarón film that is kind of forgotten that it's in the collection, which is Solo con tu Pareja.
I haven't seen it, actually.
It's kind of like a mixture of that dark themes with slapstick humor that I think is very typical of a particular style of I guess just generally Hispanic humor. And I think you really have to be in the mood, and you also have to sort of know going in that that's what you're gonna get, because otherwise it kind of feels a little bit outsized and ridiculous.
Right. It does border on camp. I mean, not camp as in bad film camp, but silliness a little bit, over the top. It's definitely a taste, and I can see how people don't like that, or people might not like that. Although it seems like Women on the Verge is pretty universally appreciated, if not beloved. Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down, which I do pair with this movie because they came right after each other, but I think that's the most mainstream of his films and the most accessible, and I think that's probably the most successful here, except for maybe Talk to Her, I'd say. But I think we're probably going to get more from Almodovar over the next few years. I think Criterion has the rights, so maybe The Matador might come out, maybe Law of Desire, or maybe some of his later work. So I guess would you be excited for that, or... Not so much?
I wouldn't be excited in the way that other people are excited by it, but I have no problem with as much of his filmography being in the collection, because he is a very important filmmaker, and and anytime I think that they move outside of their sort of base countries of Japan, England, Italy, France, anytime we're getting more of filmmakers from the less traveled countries, and unfortunately at the moment in the collection Spain is one of those countries, the better off the collection is. So and then also just the fact that he's a contemporary filmmaker, that, you know, he's kind of joining Wes Anderson in that, or Jarmusch to a certain degree, even mm-hmm. though it's really only early Jarmusch, in being somebody who is still working today, but Criterion is putting out as much of their stuff as they can get their hands on.
Yeah, and he's also, he was on the disc too. He gave an interview for this disc, which I watched and I enjoyed. So it's nice to, you know, you're not going to get Bergman chiming in on Shane right. if it ever comes out. So
yeah, and he was also on the Executioner disc, and that was a really great supplement.
Yeah, and it's great to hear him talking about Spanish cinema. So maybe Ariche will come. Is that how you pronounce Victor? I think he's due to get a Blu-ray release.
Yeah, I think it would be Ariche, but yeah, I mean, El Sor has been on Hulu for the entire time that they had their Hulu channel. So I'm not sure what's going on with that, because that's certainly mm-hmm. Considered one of the great Spanish films of all time, and it is surprising that they haven't released that.
And they have a DVD of Beehive, but yes. I'm surprised that one has, because I think that one would lend itself well to Blu-ray very well. So, all right, well, I thought this would be a short show, but we're already running long, so let's get to our short takes. Do you have anything you watched that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I finished Lone Wolf and Cub, the 6-film series box set that was released last year in time for the holidays.
Great.
And I think we've kind of exchanged about this a little bit online, so I think we're on the same page. I did not really care for it.
I didn't either, and I've been waiting for this to come up, because I don't, you know, I know a lot of people love it, and I don't want to just hate on something, but I... Yeah, so you finished the whole thing, and it didn't pick back up for you?
I did, yeah. Actually, I think the 6th is borderline the worst one. Mm. The 3rd is pretty brutal. I mean, it's so slow. but I really think as a set, it doesn't offer really anything of interest to the collection as a whole. Especially sitting next to Zatoichi, which I think is far superior.
I agree,
And Lady Snowblood, which has a lot of the same elements mm-hmm. in terms of veering towards exploitation cinema in a way that Zatoichi did not. I love having Lady Snowblood in the collection, but Lone Wolf and Cub, to me, feels like one of the... more obvious commercial releases for mm-hmm. Criterion in recent memory. You know, it is a little disappointing. I was also very, I don't want to say troubled, but there's a lot of rape.
There is. Yeah. Yeah. It's tough.
And
to...
it's not handled particularly well. And, you know, having watched all of the collection, it can get disconcerting the way that mm-hmm. that sexual violence in particular is treated in the collection, and this edition, kind of as being a more recent release after having watched all of those other films, it really puts into stark relief just how few female voices there are in the collection, and mm-hmm. how clear of a male perspective the vast majority of movies in the collection have on sort of the way of the world. It's especially stark because it's treated as such entertainment. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no rape scene in Lone Wolf and Cub that didn't take the opportunity to show the woman's breasts.
Right, right.
And it's just at a certain point it just becomes tiresome and offensive mm-hmm. In a way that, you know, when somebody gets their head cut off and their head keeps talking, it's a little bit more easy to take because you know that it's this elevated level of cartoonish violence that I didn't see in the violence directed at women.
Yeah, I try not to judge films based on the trends or the ideas of today. So That didn't bother me as much as it bothered you, but I also think that it's very, they know their audience. This is a very masculine film, and it's made by very, you know, masculine directors. I doubt if there were many women on the set. I could be wrong. And so, yeah, it's that's different than a lot of the other selections from the set. Actually, although Japanese, I'd say, was probably pretty, comparatively, pretty male-dominated for a while. In fact, you know, Ozu actually is probably the exception, because he gave voice to a lot of female characters, and we're about to talk about him. So yeah, I'm with you. In fact, I think the Snowblood comparison is interesting, because I think that the second film paled compared to the first. So for me, Lone Wolf [S2] Yes. [S1] Was basically the second film, and then it got worse from there. And you know, I'm a guy. I will, you know, of course, I do like the female body and appreciate that sort of thing, but it was just like, come on, enough. And I think probably my least favorite was the one with the lady with the tattoos. So I'm only through the fifth one now, and I've watched about 10 minutes of it, and I just couldn't stomach it. So I'll get back to it and finish the series. But this was disappointing. The first one was okay. The lead, you know, he was fine, but when we talk about Zatoichi, I think Shintaro Katsu, you just can't compare how, you know, he's a little offbeat, not your prototypical hero, but he's so likable and does so well with the role. I forget the name of the gentleman that played the assassin, but I just didn't see much with him. He just didn't give me much.
Oh, I agree. Well, he's actually his brother.
Katsu's brother?
Katsu's brother. But I totally agree. I mean, I thought he wasn't right for the role. I think there's a certain appeal to especially the first two films that makes them enjoyable enough watches. I am happy to have Shogun Assassin on Blu-ray, because I am a Wu-Tang fan, and
okay.
That was a huge film for them, and a lot of the film's dialogue is included as samples on some of their records, especially Liquid Swords.
Oh,
but
cool.
I can't help just feeling like this is a set that is better reserved for one of the boutique labels that specializes a little bit more in this kind of stuff.
Yeah, Arrow. This would be right up their alley, and I probably would have bought it either way. But I think my expectations, and you know, Criterion does plenty of genre things too, and we can't just be high art all the time. But yeah, it doesn't seem like a good fit. But I do own it. It'll stay on my shelf. It'll just be that redheaded stepchild. And I'm sure we're going to get a lot of hate for this, because a lot of people love these movies. But yeah, I tried. I really did. All right, well, let me move on to an Asian film that is kind of genre, a little bit of a genre film, but a little bit not. And that's The Housemaid. That's from the World Cinema Box the One. And I'm going to try to make my way through this set before two gets through. We're actually going to do an episode that covers a few of these. But this is a 1960 Ki Young Kim, and this was not what I expected. I expected some, you know, quiet, reserved art film, character-oriented, which is what I almost always expect from an Asian film from the 60s, unless it's like, you know, Wuxia or something. This was whacked out. it was... Basically, like, this was so warped it made Fatal Attraction seem kind of tame. it's a thriller. There's a little bit of noir in there too, but it's a lot of horror, not gruesome horror. It wouldn't be seen as horror by today's standards, and it was remade, so I don't know how that went. And in fact, in one of the supplements, they Scorsese actually compared it to a Tale of Two Sisters, which is a later film that I could see that. Just as far as the harshness and brutality, I liked it quite a bit. Was surprised by how freaked out it was, and the motifs with the rice, the rats and rice too. Actually, come to think of it, and rat poison and just the back and forth. If anything, if I have a criticism, there was too much too much drama swinging each way between the two females, and the it's because it's basically just a domestic horror is what it is. So yeah, I think it's worth watching. It's not probably what anybody would expect if you don't know anything going into it. So are you a fan?
Yeah, I really love this movie. I agree with pretty much everything you said. It can veer towards the melodramatic at times.
Yes.
But it's so highly stylized that mm-hmm. it doesn't bother me when it goes in that direction. Of the box set, I think probably Dry Summer is the straight classic
right.
masterpiece.
Okay.
But this probably would be a close second for me. Just it's quite a surprise, and it's so great to see an early Korean film like this from mm-hmm. an industry that it is so firmly established now and churning out.
Oh yeah, you know,
whether it's great films or just sort of generic commercial material. To yep. go back to an era that was a little bit more raggedy mm-hmm. and super compelling. It's a really fun watch.
And this one certainly influenced pretty much all of those, even the more accessible mainstream Korean films to the art ones that we talked about. I Saw the Devil a couple weeks ago. It's that certainly influenced that one. And a good point about the stylization is, and we're about to talk about Ozu, where the camera. But mostly doesn't move, occasionally moves, and whereas this one, the camera is fluid, and it's almost moving all the time, and it's panning back and forth between different parts of the set. It's very visually interesting pretty much the entire time. Kind of like maybe Vendor's Wings of Desire, maybe not yes. quite as fluid as that, but constantly moving. So yeah, I really did appreciate that. It's not my favorite film. And I've only seen, from that set, I've only seen Reedy's so far, and I've heard that Tukibuki is the good one, or the best one. Although I've heard good things about this one, The Housemaid, as well, so I think it lived up. So, okay, that was Short Takes. Let's get into Filmstruck. So, you might have heard last week we talked about a lot of titles leaving Filmstruck, and we had some opinions. I'd say pretty strong opinions, but a little uncertain, maybe a nervous opinions. We're worried that there just won't be enough influx of titles to keep up with the ones that are going to leave. So do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I thought, all of the points that you guys were making last week were definitely fair. But I do feel like there is a more panic in the kind of cinephile community about this than
yeah.
there needs to be. Because I think this was always the plan for Filmstruck from the beginning. The idea of the service is to be a rotated set of curated films. And so I think that they have enough labels and enough deals with people that they are going to be rotating in and out a lot of high-profile movies. And I don't think we need to worry as much, especially those of us who subscribe to the Criterion channel as well, mm-hmm. which, it would surprise me that anybody wouldn't also subscribe to the Criterion channel, especially if you get the year-long. It's practically the same price.
Yeah.
I think, those movies are always going to be there and available to people. And then when it comes to the Criterion Spine Number titles that are leaving, I choose to look at that as a bit of a glass half full situation where
right.
those titles wouldn't have been on the service at all to mm-hmm. begin with. And the only way that they were able to put them on the service was to have these limited engagement deals. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, with Something Wild, which is, I assume we'll get to, is going to be on the service only for a month.
Right.
I'm thrilled to be able to watch that without spending $20 or waiting for the one copy from my library to stop being on hold. So I think that what they're doing is right along with their plan of what they wanted the service to be. And even if you miss those four or five films that you really wanted to watch, there's going to be four or five films coming on the service next week that you're going to want to watch just as much. So
Yeah, and actually that's a good point about the digital spines, and you might remember that David said he just basically wasn't interested in digital spines, which for somebody that buys them all,
right.
it's not as appealing, but actually you're a good example of where that demand would come from, somebody that doesn't buy them all but would still like to experience the entire presentation, so to speak, from Criterion. So, and yeah, and I think I mentioned before that some of them, they didn't say the end date. I think they did for Mulholland Drive, and I think it's gone already. There were some major titles that did leave even the Criterion channel, so I'm not worried because there does seem to be a constant rotation and a lot of movies coming in. But yeah, if they're going to... Well, actually, if anything, it does put us on notice to watch. If we want to watch something, watch it before it goes, or keep an eye out, because... There were some films that were pulled that were on my watch list that I, you know, they were gone by the time I found out about it. So that I didn't have my pitchfork out and I wasn't screaming, but yeah, obviously I would have liked to have gotten to it.
No, and I think that's a really good point. They need to do a better job of letting people know when titles are going to expire. You know, I'm glad that they put the list up, but mm-hmm. at the same time, the idea that you have to go to the list every day to check to make sure that all the titles on your list are not being removed
right.
is a lot to ask of people. It would be nice if they had a notification on your watch list of films that are going to expire. Hulu recently switched that, where they actually elevate the titles that are going to expire to the top of your watch list with a notification to let you
right,
know that they're
right.
expiring soon. And that would be a great addition to Filmstruck as well.
And Netflix did that too, if I recall. I do have Netflix, but I don't watch it as much. But I seem to remember there was something on the queue that said when titles expire. So yeah, that would be very helpful. And I do have a podcast that covers Filmstruck. So if anybody should know of these titles leaving and have some and be focused on it, I think I should. But yeah, I missed it too. All right, well, let's get into some of the Filmstruck content from this week. And man, there is a lot. They do. So that's one compliment, is they do pump stuff in and out. And there's quite a bit this week. So I'll start. I think I'm going to have to speed round some of it, but I'll start with the Filmstruck Originals. I thought this was an interesting collection they put on the main channel. And this was basically, I believe it was all of the originally filmed content for that Filmstruck produced. And it ranged from, I didn't write them down, but there were all sorts of genres and filmmakers, and I'd seen a handful. Of course, I didn't binge watch them for this episode, but I thought it was interesting, and I think they are producing good content, and it's interesting to have that categorized and us to be able to just kind of look at the full scope. Did you watch any of these, or do you have any opinions on them?
I have watched a few of them, and I do find them very enjoyable. I find their intros to films also to be enjoyable in the same way that the TCM intros are worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is a situation where they were listening to complaints from people who didn't feel like they could find this material on their website. And so this is sort of a makeshift solution bunching all of the originals together into one list so that people could scroll through and see what was interesting to them, because I was hoping that Filmstruck would solve the Hulu problem of not being able to find supplements easily.
Sure.
And they didn't. They did it a little bit, but it's still pretty tough to find things. So I think this is just one of their sort of stopgap solutions until they figure out a better plan.
Yeah, I think it's easier on the actual titles or the curated groups themselves, because then there's special features and you just see that in the scroll. But yeah, for individual releases, it's a little tougher. It's tougher for me to find commentaries, and that might just be me. But yeah, so anyway, it's interesting. I didn't go out of my way to watch any new ones that I'd missed, because I basically just watch them as I can. There were, intros. I think I saw some Bill Hader intros, which I think I'd seen a few of those. So yeah, there were a few groupings on the new channel, and one really small one was All Heart, which is the connection is Roxy Hart from Chicago. And so there's only two. I didn't realize there was one from the 20s. There was a 1927 film from Frank Urson that I guess it must have been the influence of Chicago. I'm not a Chicago historian, and I actually didn't like the movie, and I haven't seen the musical. So do you have any thoughts on Chicago?
I was surprised that they had such a big title on the service. It did win Best Picture, so I think that was the. I don't. I also am not the biggest fan of that movie, but I do think that it was encouraging to see that they can pull titles like that.
I think so too. And but again, that's kind of the same kind of caliber title that maybe like an HBO would pull, maybe. And that would be like a catalog title for HBO for 1 month.
Right.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see more of those. I don't know that it fills a need. I don't know how many Filmstruck people are going to watch Chicago, but you never know. There's a lot of them out there. All right, well, there was also early David Lean, which is way up my wheelhouse. I'm a big fan of pretty much all David Lean, even his epics. Well, I say even, as if that's a minority opinion. But, you know, I've professed my love for A Brief Encounter, and I like, I even like Blythe Spirit. I love Hobson's Choice. So are you a big early Lean fan?
I am. Brief Encounter actually is my favorite David Lean movie, period, from any
Mine
era.
too. Close with Lawrence of Arabia, but mine too.
Yeah, and I think his Oliver Twist adaptation is really great. There's actually a couple on here that I haven't seen, one of which I hadn't even heard of. The kind of the non-Criterion. I'm trying to remember. Madeline.
Yeah, I'd
And
heard of it, but I hadn't seen it, so
yeah, and then The Passionate Friends, I'm very interested in. Is that with Claude Rains, I think?
I hope so. I like Claude
Yeah.
Rains, but these are a couple I haven't seen. And again, we probably should, if you want to watch them because they might not remain. I think Madeline, I think that one, I do know about that one. It's one I think was rumored for Criterion someday, but I don't. Maybe it'll happen. Maybe not. They kind of blur together after a while, and.
Yeah, I believe they both have Criterion branding on the picture. So, maybe an early Lean box
Yeah,
Eclipse
another.
box.
Yeah, maybe, or maybe another box. Period. We already have the Noel Coward box, so I think there's plenty
Yep.
other selections to fill another box. So, if you're listening, let's make it happen. And there was another list that was interesting called New York Independent Cinema, which I love New York. I'm going back up there in August, and I love independent cinema. Hadn't seen a whole lot of these. I think actually the only one I've seen is Shadows, which I think is one of Cassavetes' better efforts. That's his really his breakthrough effort. Might be his debut. So, are you a fan of New York independent cinema?
Yeah, I am. I have seen both Shadows and Putney Swope. Putney Swope is a really fun movie. The other ones look fascinating. On the Bowery, it's kind of like it seems like it's a half documentary, half narrative film. Love to see what the Bowery looked like in 1957. And then there's also a Jonas Mekas film on here, which is interesting. I don't know if I am ready to sit through 3 hours of Jonas Mekas, but it is nice to see more experimental film on the service.
Yeah, Timothy Leary's in that too, so that's probably pretty interesting, pretty
Yes.
provocative, probably. I do watch a lot of New York independent cinema, so it's strange, but I think this is more obscure, classic, groundbreaking cinema.
Right.
It's not like Noah Baumbach. All right, well, let's get into the Criterion Channel. And so I love the double features and the short plus feature. So they were pretty interesting this week. This week we had, for the Friday double feature, we had Tunes of Glory and The Angels Share. The latter, well, it's Ronald Neame for Tunes of Glory, and Ken Loach did The Angels Share. That was I've seen The Angels Share, and I would call it interesting. I've used that word a lot this episode, but not great. I'd say it's average Lean or Lean Loach, maybe a little below average, but it was watchable. It was a compelling story, just nothing to get excited about. Of course, the connection is Scotland and alcohol, which is pretty common. Have you seen Tunes of Glory?
I have seen Tunes of Glory. I like it. It's a little bit of that British stiff upper lip thing that I could kind of take or leave. You know, it's a classy movie, I guess. Mm-hmm. I have not seen Angel's Share. I do remember a few years ago that being rumored to be coming to Criterion. So it's interesting to see it pop up here. As far as more recent Ken Loach goes, I certainly think of it as a kind of minor film in his catalog. So I will be interested to see if that eventually comes to disc or not.
Yeah, it was okay. I guess I could see it as one of those, you know, December titles maybe. But no, if we're going to get a Ken Loach, I think I want to get the one that won the Palme d'Or. That's I forget the name. Daniel Blake, is that it? Something like that.
Yeah, I don't remember the name, but I am very interested in seeing that movie.
Me too. And Ken Loach has a connection with Kes is the big one. I would like to see more, maybe like Poor Cow or something. Or I love Sweet 16. I'm a big Ken Loach fan, although, you know, use the subtitles, guys.
Yes, Kes is like definition subtitle movie, English language movie.
Pretty much all of his work, especially the Scottish stuff. And by the way, just as an aside, the subtitles in, at least on the Amazon Fire on Filmstruck, are not great. They're kind of intrusive. So I actually started the horse, or not the horse's mouth, Tunes of Glory, and you really have to watch it. You don't have to, but it's best to watch it with subtitles just to pick up on some of the Scottish. But yeah, it just kind of covers half the screen, so I turned it off. All right, let's. What's next? So we have we had another Adventures in Movie Going. This was with Mary Carr and Antonio Monda. And Mary Carr is a poet who I don't know much about. And Monda is a film writer and interviewer. Actually, I was more interested in Monda here. Nothing against Carr, but I just she's not a known quantity to me. I did ask my wife. My wife teaches poetry in English, so maybe not up on current poets as much, but she hadn't heard of her either. So have you heard of Mary Carr?
I have not, but Antonio Monda was teaching at NYU Film School while I was at school there. And I didn't take a full class with him. I wasn't in the main film school, but I did sit in on a number of his lectures, and he's always fascinating and has a real unique perspective on movies.
Yeah, and I think he's known for his good questions when he brought some of those here. So I do love the series. I loved the Corman and Bill Hader episodes. And actually, even though I didn't know her, I think because of Monda and asking the right questions, I found it to be an interesting piece. What a poet. And I like these different perspectives of art filmmaking from people outside of the actual circle of filmmaking. It could be one of us up there speaking to Monda. It probably wouldn't be as interesting as the poet. No offense to you. That's more self-deprecating. But but I enjoyed it. Did you watch this?
No, I haven't watched it.
Okay, well, someday. Have you watched the other two?
I watched the Corman one.
Yeah,
which
that was
I really enjoyed.
Corman's great, and that's where the subject really is what stands out. And then we had a short feature. We had The Grandmother, which is a David Lynch short. And then we had Valerie and Her Week of Wonders. I've talked about that, I think, on an earlier episode of this. I forget. And I didn't get to see The Grandmother. I like to see the shorts, but I just had too much podcast prep. Didn't get to it. But have you seen this?
I have.
Yeah? Does it measure up to Valerie? And I'm sure it's warped, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. You know, Lynch short films, I can generally take or leave. I like The Alphabet in kind of a twisted way, but, you know, it's not really my bag.
Yeah, I think most of those are more high concept and then, you know, just okay execution. I like the bunny one. I forget what it's called, but that was okay. And that fit into Inland Empire pretty well. And in fact, I think if Inland Empire ever comes out on Criterion, that short will probably be included. Yeah, so I didn't watch this, but in fact, partly the reason I didn't watch it is because I saw it was over 30 minutes. If it were five, I would have watched it. So yeah, if it comes out on a spine, I might catch it. And speaking of a spine, last Filmstruck selection is Something Wild, Digital Spine. So you are interested in these. So are you planning to watch this soon?
Yeah, this week. I am really looking forward to it. I'm very curious to see this movie, and I also have heard great things about the extras, so I'm glad I'm going to be able to dig into those as well.
Yeah, I would temper those expectations just because I think that we agree more often than not. I thought it was okay, and I really liked the beginning. I think I talked about this on an episode, so I'm probably repeating myself, but the first 20 minutes are stellar, and I don't want to trample on your expectations, but we'll just say the remainder didn't do as much for me, although some people really like it, so you never know. So, okay, well, I guess it's easier with two people. We're pretty much done. So we have our what have we been doing. So what have you been doing?
Oh, what have I been doing? Well, I watched 50 movies in January, so that's what I've been doing.
Yeah, I was probably close. Well, I did a lot of shorts, so I probably had more, but they don't count as much.
Yeah, so I log them on Letterboxd, which is always a fun way to keep track of what you're thinking. So that's basically where my presence has been on the internet these days. I'd love to get back into the Criterion by Spine's Twitter account, and probably will do that soon. But for now, it's a lot of Letterboxd, a lot of animation, a lot of Eclipse titles, and then just some fun dumb stuff.
Sausage Party.
Yeah, man. Well, that was a movie night with the wife, and she actually bailed about 20 minutes in, but I felt like I needed to soldier through it.
I enjoyed it, so I that's a conversation we'll have elsewhere, but so we don't agree on that one. But all right, what I've been doing is I did a Fassbender episode last week on Wrong Reel, which I had a good time with, and I think went well. We got a lot of good feedback. And I'm about to do an Ozu episode with a couple assholes.
Yeah, man, those guys.
I'm talking to one of them right now. In fact, we're recording this on Sunday, and we're going to record Ozu after, but Ozu probably will take a week or two to come out, and that's on close up. So, okay, we have our pieces of flair. So what's your piece of flair?
My piece of flair is a heads up for a number of movies that have at this point been almost impossible to see in the U.S. And are now streaming on Amazon Prime. So if you are a Prime member, you can see a number of sort of the key films in Taiwan, the new Taiwanese cinema movement. There are two anthology films, In Our Time and The Sandwich Man. The former has an Edward Yang sequence in it, and the latter has a Hu Hsiao-hsien film. And then there's also The Terrorizers from Edward Yang, which is a very challenging movie, a lot harder to kind of decipher than his two films that are currently in the collection, but a extremely interesting and rewarding sort of mystery of a watch. And there's also a number of other great films, like there's a Hu Hsiao-hsien, Dust in the Wind is available. And then Simon Lang, I'm sure I'm butchering all of these names, has two films, Vive l'Amour and Murmur of Youth. And then there's also an early Ang Lee, Pushing Hands, that is available to watch. So a lot of, there's also just really great Asian cinema in general that's popping up on Amazon Prime. Great Korean films, a lot of mainland Chinese movies, which we don't get any of in the collection, really. Mm-hmm. And then a lot, Arrow now has a deal as well, so there's a lot of great Japanese cult stuff that's popping up, including Female Prisoner Scorpion.
Yeah, I've been pretty happy with Amazon Prime, and Netflix is okay, but they've more moved towards original programming and modern film. And in fact, I think the Netflix classic catalog is pretty lacking. And I know you're not talking. Well, I guess some of that Taiwanese cinema is definitely classic, but Amazon has they do original programming as well, but they also are putting together a nice catalog of streaming films. So. Of classic films. So yeah, that's great. I probably won't watch all those, but one of the compilations you mentioned, I think it was In My Time or In Our Time. That, yep. I believe that one was mentioned on the extra for A Brighter Summer Day as being a really a crucial, pivotal film in the new Taiwanese cinema. So I might check that one out. Are the transfers pretty good?
They're not. I've only watched the Terrors so far. I took a look really quickly at In Our Time just to see what it looked like. They're not the best transfers I've ever seen of movies. I'll take any Yang any way I can get it. So I do recommend the Terrorizers just because a lot of people who are kind of more into the enigmatic sort of intellectual side of cinema prefer it to Brighter Summer Day and Yi Yi, which is saying quite a bit for both of us, I know. So yeah. it is definitely worth checking out and not necessarily waiting for an impeccable transfer.
Yeah, which might take a while. Yes. I know the other transfers took, A Brighter Summer Day took years, so... And they're not going to put a lot of resources into a more obscure Yang film. At least I don't think so.
Yeah, and all of these titles, almost all of them, I think, are from a company called Cinehouse, which I had never heard of. I tracked down. They have a website under construction. So who knows how they got their hands on these or why they're being put up on Amazon Prime. But just don't ask any questions and just press play.
Man, I just learned that Bill Paxton died. This will probably be... common news by the time this episode comes out, but some complications from surgery. So,
God.
I don't think he's on Criterion, but definitely an actor we know about. So, sorry to bum you out there. I'll try to lighten it up with my piece of flair, which is MacGruber 2 is coming out. And we've kind of joked about this online in our little film geek circles, but... you and I share an appreciation for MacGruber. I do have it as 10 or as 5 stars on Letterboxd. I'm not saying it's up there with the best of cinema, but it just hits my funny bone. And I rewatched it last week, and it's very, very fun, very quotable, very crude. Some of the stuff, like the celery stuff, it's a little too much. But there are some great lines, like you know what doesn't stink, and the delivery I think is great. So it didn't do well, but it's become sort of a cult hit, and it definitely is. In hindsight, I've appreciated it more, so I even watched the commentary, which they actually did the director did a drinking game. Every time they say MacGruber or Mac or Groobs, he would take a drink, but he admitted that he would be really plastered if he actually took good size swallows, and I think he skipped a bunch, but there's so many. But anyway, I guess the cult following has become large enough that they've got the financing, and a couple weeks ago they announced MacGruber 2 is being prepared. So I'm usually not into SNL sequels, but I'm down with this one, and hopefully they'll double down on what worked with the first one. So. What do you think? MacGruber 2?
I'm game. I'm ready. I mean, these sequels very rarely live up to the originals, but like Anchorman 2, I think, is a good example of not really connecting in the way the original did. But hopefully they know enough to bring something fresh to the table to a certain degree, but stick with the strengths of the original.
Or Zoolander 2. That's another one that didn't go so well. So, all right. Well, that's the episode. So thanks for joining us, and I'll talk to you in a few minutes about Osu.
All right.
Anywhere excited. We can find you. What's your Letterboxd?
My Letterboxd is Matthew E.G. With two T's, and I'm also on Twitter under the same handle.
Matthew E.G. And I'm AWest505. You can find the show at Criterion_now on Twitter, or you can find us on the Criterion Cast Master Feed on Facebook, and you can find a lot of our stuff on CriterionCloseUp.com.